Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And welcome to another episode of Chefology. I am one of your chefologists, Asabi Goodman, and I am joined today with Josh DeVetta and the lovely Gracie Mack.
Hey, hey guys. We kept her around for one more episode.
They allowed me to stay. I just didn't leave. I let hold up.
I know. She
while.
Just held us all captive.
We came back for the next episode. She was sleeping on the couch ready.
We're surrounded
to
by kitties.
To shuffle out your other choice. Yeah.
Exactly. So welcome to our listeners from around the world. Today we are talking about a very interesting genre of music.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. Mm. One that we know very little about. Brit pop.
Hey.
Bring it.
I think we need to say it one word.
Brit pop.
Yes, it is one word.
It is one word. Yes. One, and I only just learned this, even though I've been researching this thing for a very long time. So, Britpop, what is it? This is a big question.
Yes.
Britpop is categorized as music out of the UK from the specific years of 1993 to 1997. It's a very short time frame. It is a genre of music that pays homage to the 60s and 70s of Britain. Mm. I believe there is another term, Cool Britannia.
Yes, it is. That's the term, yeah.
And so they really pay homage to the Union Jack and all things that are uniquely British. Now, there are some bands that did really, really well around the world, and there were some that just stayed right at home, and probably because they were so British. But, you know, some big bands that we all know, Spice Girls, Oasis, Blur.
Blur, yeah. The Verve.
The Verve, yeah, yep. Really so big. Those are some of the bigger Britpop bands or bigger bands that came out of this era. So those are the songs that we're going to be, or bands that we're going to be talking about. And we've all found some very popular songs and some obscure ones as well that we're going to be discussing today.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's take a short break and then we're going to get right into it.
Let's talk about X, baby.
Crappy relationships, the bane of our collective existence. But what do we learn from our mistakes?
I'm relationship columnist Liz Best.
And I'm funny guy Tom Harris.
Ghosts of Boyfriends Past will chat to guests about love gone wrong and take you on a journey through the funny, tragic, horrifying...
And sometimes just plain bonkers stories about that crazy little thing called love. It's like a group therapy session.
With two people completely unqualified to be leading it. New episodes drop fortnightly on Thursday, so join in to hear tales of heartbreak and woe and hopefully wind up a little wiser or drunker for it.
That's Not Gunner Productions podcast.
And we're back. So today we are discussing the bands that make up the genre called Britpop. 1993 to 1997.
You know what I mean?
UK.
You know what I mean? You're right, babes.
Yeah. What's he like? Yeah. So, Josh.
Yes.
We're gonna start with you, lovely.
Oh, thank you. Well, as always, I'm so grateful for the platform and
to talk about Britpop.
Are you doing something with the platform, Josh?
Yes, we are expressing our, expressionism for a very interesting... Now, reading up on all this, it was very, very interesting because this Britpop, because I'm trying to say it like one word.
Britpop.
You're right, babes.
it always has to be some British.
Yeah, exactly. Can I have a batter sausage? Just and we were talking about this off the air, how it really was this small era of time that really informed the next sound for a lot of the really big bands. And you'll probably be really surprised to hear some of these bands are actually a part of the Britpop movement. But with my choices, I've gone for kind of like the pre-Britpop that went into what we know as Britpop or Cool Britannia.
Yeah.
And then what bands came out of that sound. Sure. So I don't usually go chronological, but I have gone a bit chronological just to, affirm my point about, this, because it really is 93 to 97. That's only 4 years in time.
It's a small window.
Like, that is that's the Olympics once every 4 years. Like, it's very... You know, it's very specific to what's going on and what was going on in British pop culture at the time as well. Mm. So my first, oh my God, as soon as we start talking about Brits, I go, and my first choice.
So anyway,
vibes. Now, you wouldn't think that this had anything to do with the Britpop movement, but it did. And this band, I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're called Radiohead.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes. So indie.
Yes.
They sound familiar.
They sound like they could be on Triple J.
Right? Are they Brisbane based?
Yeah. They're on Unearthed. Triple J Unearthed. Now, they had a really, really big song back in the early 90s called Creep.
Mm.
I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo. What the hell am I doing here? I don't belong here. I feel like that is my constant dialogue in my head.
Existential crisis.
Wherever I go, even when I come to the table as podcast. But so this was released in 92. So this is one talking about this pre-Britpop moment. Now it didn't actually initially have chart success. It was actually a bit of a flop, actually.
Was it?
Yeah, but it got this second life because it became a worldwide hit. Mm, and then and then the UK embraced it, sort of thing. So it's really, really interesting. It's still their most successful single. Actually, it's definitely like I've heard this at karaoke many times in my life. I've heard this at parties many times in my life. And I will say, like, this is... probably out of all the, out of the, this is our 13th episode. Congratulations, everyone. In the 13th episode, this was definitely the hardest one for me because I can't stand, like, I actually don't connect with this music on a soul level like I have with many other genres that we've talked about. But I revere the influence and the success of this particular era as well. Yeah. And so with that, like, obviously Radiohead, huge success with Creep. They had other songs as well. I'm not familiar with a lot of Radiohead stuff except for Creep because, it's not music that I listen to constantly.
Sure.
But I'm absolutely aware of how big this song is for a lot of people. Mm. And a lot of people relate to this song. I think of all the different covers I've heard of this song.
Yeah, so many.
Jazz arrangement, blues arrangement, rock arrangement, R&B arrangement. Like, there's just so many different covers of it. Mm. Country arrangement, like so many different things.
I think we should also say it's not to be confused with TLC's Creep.
Oh, yes. TLC had a creep. You're a creep. That's actually my song. It's like, I love that. So I love that song.
It's not that remake.
Yeah. And what was really interesting is that Radiohead, we were talking about how they took, this movement took inspiration from the earlier British bands.
Yes.
Like, they were influenced by the Hollies and the Stones and things like that. They really were.
Yeah.
It really does remind me of when you hear like a obscure band that's not famous yet, and they're known for tributing a prior era. Like, I've definitely had that experience before with other band, or even like when I first heard Janelle Monáe, like I was like, oh, this is such a throwback to 60s soul and all that. Like, really, really, really interesting. So that's my first choice. Great song, we love it. Radiohead,
fantastic,
excellent. Mm. Now I'm going to go really into the Britpop movement now, or the Cool Britannia movement, and talk about two bands. We've definitely heard of them. One is called Blur.
Yes.
And the other one's called Oasis. And these were the two biggest bands to come out of that movement.
Yes.
I'm sure we all have choices from these two bands.
Yep.
I've chosen Girls and Boys. Girls and the Boys and the One. Again, a song that didn't really connect to me on a soul level. with that, it was in 1994, lead single from their third album, Park Life, which was a really big album for them.
Yeah.
And the other band... Oasis, they had a big song. Their biggest song is called Wonderwall.
Yes.
Have we heard
familiar,
the song?
Are we familiar? Audience?
I don't know.
Anyway,
so
here's Wonderwall.
Hate it. You're my Wonderwall.
Oh my,
right?
Mm. Yes. Yep. And there used to be posters of, or like news articles about Blur versus Oasis all the time. In fact, I think they even tried to do a concert where it was a Blur Oasis concert. Like, it was really, really...
Wow, that would have been heavy.
Yeah, and that would have had so many people rock up to that concert too.
Yeah.
So two huge songs. As we all know with Wonderwall, today is going to be the day that we're going to throw it back to you. If I'm going to choose which one I like better out of the both of us, it's probably Wonderwall over Girls and Boys, personally. Mm. Just because I've definitely, I feel like I've gotten drunk and scream the lyrics to Wonderwall a few times in my life.
And that's you know it's in your soul. Yeah. if you're screaming it drunk, that's in there for life.
I would always naturally blend that song with Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day all the time. And I would always get confused, so I'd be like, today is gonna, and then I go,
My
shadow heart's the only one that's beating.
I'm pretty sure there is a professional mashup of those two.
Is there?
I have a whole album of mashups, and that's one of them.
Well, yeah. Thank you for calling me a professional. So.
You're welcome.
Which is great. Again, so with Boys and Girls and blah, 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 the Wonderwall, they did have great worldwide success with those songs. Wonderwall was definitely more successful than Girls and Boys.
I'm not surprised.
Yes. Girls and Boys only got up to 59 on the Billboard Hot 100, so they didn't quite crack America with the Britpop sound. But Wonderwall was huge. <Yeah. laughs> As much as we hate to, and they were big in Australia too, actually. They actually topped our charts in Australia and New Zealand.
Really?
Yeah, really, 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 really interesting. Really, really interesting to talk about too. So I think, like, if you're from the UK, like this, I think from my own research, you either loved this moment in time or you bloody hated it.
It's just not for you.
Yeah, it's just not for you. I kind of feel similar about it myself. But so that's the Britpop movement. And then what this movement did was really, as we talked about in the intro, it really informed the next sound that was happening. And so I've chosen another song, and I've talked about it in an honorable mention before because we talked about movie soundtracks the other week. And I talked about how Cruel Intentions is one of my favorite movies because this song is in the movie. Mm. And so in 97, a band called The Verve released a song called Bittersweet Symphony.
Oh, boom, yes. Boom,
that string part is so beautiful.
Yeah. So recognizable. Yeah. That's the one.
It's a great song.
And they end up being the soundtrack for Cruel Intentions as well. With that, The Verve really were like taking inspiration from the Rolling Stones, but they actually got a plagiarism lawsuit against them. Mick Jagger filed against them. Yeah. And so on Bittersweet Symphony, Mick Jagger end up getting a writing credit on it.
I remember reading about this.
Yeah. It's really, really interesting because it was Jagger and his writing partner, Jagger signed all his writing publishing over to the other guy. And then basically the other guy was like, well, let's go sue these guys then. So it was really, really interesting. There's actually a whole like a Billboard article, or actually I think it's a Rolling Stone article now that I think about it. Yeah.
That's gotta be so heartbreaking. Like, especially if you know, you've written something and you think, oh my God, I've written this great song, only to find, you know, because sometimes you don't realize that you've written something that sounds like something else.
And once it's in your head, you can't get it out.
Yeah, that's right. You know?
Especially if you're trying to immerse yourself in a certain style and write that style. It just comes out.
And it happens all the time. There's so much songwriting plagiarism cases that get settled out of court.
Yeah.
A big famous court case was Prince. He actually was able to sue another band for a quarter of a second of a snare sound.
Oh my God. A quarter of a second?
That means you got some money and some good lawyers.
Well,
what
is that? Because that's just like how can you sue over that?
Exactly right. Mariah got sued by The Emotions because Emotions sounds like The Best of My Love by the band called The Emotions.
Yes, of course.
So she was like a big target. But also she co-wrote it. So it was more so CNC Music Factory. So Savilis and Cole.
Yes.
They had done the instrumentation and Mariah had written the song over the top of it.
Yeah.
And when you hear it, you go, well, it absolutely sounds like The Best of My Love by The Emotions.
Yeah.
And also Got to Be Real by Cheryl Lynn as well.
Yes, like the exact there's
same.
A lot of that.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yep.
That's quite common. So now this song, like Bittersweet Symphony, worldwide hit.
Yes. Yeah. It's massive.
Won awards all over the place. It got to number 12 on the Hot 100. So it crapped all over Wonderwall and and what's the other band?
Girls and Boys,
the Blur. Yeah. It won VMAs. It won Grammys for Best Rock Song. Like, it really was this huge juggernaut of a song, so recognizable, as we've just said before. And just because I love Cruel Intentions, the nostalgia that's attached to this song, I just hear the strings and go, oh.
Yeah.
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Remember how that guy died?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Brian Fleet died. Oh, sorry, is that a spoiler? No. I think if the film is 21 years old, I don't think you're allowed
Sarah
to have
Michelle
Brunette. Yeah, yeah. So very, very cool. And then this last choice now. I'm talking about a Coldplay song. Coldplay apparently are a big product of this movement, so they were really inspired by this whole thing.
Yeah, post-Britpop.
Post-Britpop. Mm. Now, their album, the first album that I was aware of was called A Rush of Blood to the Head, sorry.
Yes.
Had some really successful songs on that album. Yeah. The one that I've liked the most out of all of them is called The Scientist. I think it's a really, really beautiful song.
Beautiful song.
Now, I'm going to be real. When Coldplay were hot, I was not about it.
Really?
It was beyond my understanding.
Yeah.
Whilst I was twerking to the Pussycat Dolls. That, like...
Wait, why, is that when they were hot? Because that
2003, 2008 was like their biggest... Yeah.
That's during the XY...
Yeah, so that's Russia Cold Blood and XY. I just did not connect with this music whatsoever.
Wow.
It was so
I found it.
Like, I just found Chris Martin to be not very talented.
Wow.
Like, really, really. Like, I just because I also I think it was because I this is a kid that listened to Mariah Carey and Christina Aguilera and Michael Jackson and all that.
Yeah.
So to listen to like this really simple music, I found it to be very simple music. I was like, I grew up in church and on modern worship. Like people like Hillsong were taking this sound and putting it into the church. That was the other thing as well. Mm. So I think I just hated it.
Yeah,
I was like, this is just
that makes sense. That makes sense. Because A Rush of Blood to the Head was like the first time I heard that album. I literally like stopped my car on side of the road. I was like, what is this? I need more of this.
Right.
And I was completely
maybe the world
in love.
Was looking for something like that.
Maybe. Well, and I'm also a little bit older as well. Remember?
Well,
so
well,
I'm
it is
like
an adult. They're definitely adult contemporary.
Yeah,
for
yes,
sure.
Yes. Like, and I'm like a generation older than you or half a generation older than you.
Oh,
so.
But barely look a day over 20.
Right.
Darling.
Thank you.
So they're my five choices.
Beautiful.
I have any honorable mentions for this one.
Yeah.
But but The Scientist, as I said, out of all the Coldplay songs, that's definitely the one that I go, oh, this is beautiful.
Like, yes, that is a great tune.
Yes.
That's a great thing. Well, thank you, Josh, so much. So we're going to take a short break, and then we will be back to hear what Grace has to offer.
What's your favorite TV show?
What's your favorite movie?
Do you think The Godfather is overrated?
Then you've tuned into the right place. I'm Shane.
I'm Josh.
I'm Chanstar.
And we're the Mighty Motion Picture Rangers. In-depth discussions on movies and TV. There's interviews, commentaries, and more top 10 lists than you can imagine. It's all available at the Mighty Motion Picture Rangers, available wherever you get your podcasts. Also available at thatsnotcanonproductions.com.
Thank you, sponsored ad. So, welcome back. Yes, we love them. Hello. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Shuffology. You're with your favorite shuffologist, Asabi Goodman. I'm Josh DeVetta. And right now, we're going to throw it over to our newest person of the team. But not only, she's not just new, she's part of the family already.
She's
part of the furniture.
She's the furniture.
Exactly
thank
right.
You, thank you.
And so, we've been talking about Britpop and the movement of Britpop. Pre, current, and post Britpop, and this really specific moment in time.
Yeah.
So we're going to throw it over to Gracie Mack. And what are you adding to the playlist, Gail? What am I pressing shuffle
well,
on?
Well, I gotta say with Britpop, it was Britpop.
Yeah,
it was
thank you.
Interesting. Sorry, I'm so sorry. I'm gonna get with it.
Don't do it again.
I was fascinated to learn about it and to discover that I actually am really into it.
Wow.
In terms of, and not totally, like, let's not go crazy. But I realized that I knew way more songs and actually had listened to them as a kid or as a teenager way more than I realized. So looking into what it actually entailed, I realized I had more of a connection to it than initially. So my first one is actually not something I've had a massive connection to, but a song that I just really dig.
Yes.
If it comes on in a movie, which it has in multiple movies, I always have a little shuffle going.
Yeah, you is.
Mm. It's A Girl Like You, Edwyn Collins.
Ah.
Now, you may be familiar with this song from Charlie's Angels Full Throttle.
Yeah, I'm aware of
it's
it.
It's like
yes.
a real slinky little song. It was also in Empire Records, you know, that 95 movie.
Yeah, I remember.
Great movie.
Tyler.
Love that movie.
Yeah, so it's like, it's a song that I've heard heaps in a lot of soundtracks. And sure. So I've got a lot of stuff attached to it because of stories I was interested in and connected to. So this is from Edwyn Collins' third studio album called Gorgeous George.
Hey, Gorge.
From 1994. So it's like, you know, right in there.
Right in there.
All of my ones are pretty much right in there, I sure. gotta say. Most of them.
That's what I said.
that's what I said. And fun fact, the vibraphone, that is a really strong
love
theme of this song. It's like this really cute little slinky sound. It's played by the Sex Pistols drummer.
Paul really? Cook.
Yeah. It was played by him. I don't know how that came about, but I'm just, you know, thanks Wikipedia.
Yeah, he had nothing else to do.
No, we don't use Wikipedia for our fun facts.
No.
Well, I don't anyway. Yeah.
Oh,
no,
wow.
We use it for hard facts, right? Yeah. Right?
Exactly.
Did you guys want to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if I want my choices to feel a bit more interesting, I might do a little Google every now and then.
A little sneaky Google.
Because it's all in your head, we know.
We just exactly. pour this out. We're professionals.
Yes.
So it became a worldwide hit. It really killed it in the charts. It was in top 10 in a lot of countries, including Australia. But it was number one in Iceland and in Belgium.
Mm.
That's where it got to its number one.
As you do.
So there you go.
Yeah.
They really dug that vibe.
So the song's Euro Trash. Beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. And he's Scottish, Edwyn Collins.
Oh.
Yeah. And he's sort of like saucy and kind of creepy. You know, saucy, creepy, like that. Very.
That's what every
fine
girl
line.
Likes to hear.
So yeah. Austin Powers, yeah. obviously.
He's like so much more overtly.
Does he have a handlebar mustache?
They made two different video clips for this song. They made the US version, which is quite avant-garde and arty.
Mm.
And it's like he has a line so where he says something about devil and there's like a devil flashes on his face. Like it's very arty. At least that's what they're going for. The international version, it's just him singing to the camera and like silhouettes of sexy girls. It's just like, it's a very different, I don't know why they felt the US market needed.
Because we can't have sexy girls on screen. You
I
know
suppose
how
in 94, if that, yeah. So there's two different video clip versions.
Wow.
I think in 94, we were just seeing a man's bare ass on network television for the first time. So, you know, and we couldn't say goddamn.
Wow.
Yeah. 94 was
how
rough.
Times have changed.
Mm.
So that's, I'm going chronologically, by the way, I've decided just for this because it's such a short period of time.
Yes.
Mm. So my next one is Common People by Pulp.
Hey.
Now this is...
Sloppy just keeps on shrugging his shoulders.
This is a song, well, this is a song that I actually didn't know the title of it, but when I listened to it, I was like, oh, yeah. It's that, it's got this awesome, like, speech-like narrator style lead vocal, which I really love.
So the Proclaimers.
Kind of like, like Richard Harris in Carousel, or not Carousel, in Camelot. You know, where it's like a spoken, like he's not really singing.
It's
but
not
he's
a recitative.
Like a
it's like a classical recitative. But you know, if it was in a pub.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that.
So you got I got the storyline now, the plot. Yeah.
Yeah, get all the facets of what's happening. Mm. The chorus goes, I want to be with the common people, be with the common people do. No. I don't know if that's right.
I think I ran across the video on YouTube today and I was like,
so this was like voted by, what is it, 2015 Rolling Stone Readers Poll, the number one greatest Britpop song. It is like super
over Wonderwall.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
Common People, amazing.
Yeah, it was huge. It was just really evoked like Britain at that time. It was just like absolutely, because it's a story about a girl that he meets that's kind of a snob and she's like talking about the common people and it's just so it's and it's just his
it's the
take
original
on
skater
that.
Boy.
The plebs.
Oh my god, yes. Avril.
That was a past episode.
Yes, it was.
Oh, I see. Okay. So this was 1995, this came out. And in the video clip, they have this kind of homage to the animated Beatles film, Yellow Submarine.
I love
that. They have like an homage in the style. And it's, so it's really like just really like drenched in like British culture at the time. Number two on that same 2015 Rolling Stone readers voter list is Don't Look Back in Anger by Oasis.
Love that song.
Yeah, so same year that they came out, and this is voted number two, the greatest Brit pop song
they
ever.
They were pretty
over according Wonderwall. To Rolling Stone.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, over Wonderwall, according interesting.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's a pretty... Josh is not feeling it.
Well, I think I'm just going to completely wildly speculate why that is. But you know, there's a podcast there.
There's a conspiracy theories podcast under this production company as well.
Okay, so. All right.
I'll take it there.
But I believe it's because... Wonderwall was such an international success, and these are like quintessential British successes. Right. That's my guess.
Right.
That is a good speculation.
Yeah.
Conspiracy speculation.
Yes. Like that, yeah. Don't Look Back in Anger was very popular, though. It was a very popular song.
But so. Not the level of Wonderwall, I guess.
Like, really?
So. Internationally, I would say so.
Well, okay, maybe. I don't know.
I don't think any drunk guys playing Don't Look Back in Anger at a party. I think.
You're right. Yeah. Wonderwall, definitely.
If they are, they're like alone in a room. You know what I mean? They're in like a bedroom at the party.
They're having a D&M.
With themselves and Noel Gallagher. Yeah. Yeah. So this song, Don't Look Back in Anger, Oasis is pretty famous throughout their whole history of being accused of plagiarism. This is bringing it back to what we were talking about before. Because that happened a lot. Like the main songwriter is Noel Gallagher, and usually the main lead singer is his brother Liam.
Yep.
But this is one of the first tracks that... This is the first lead hit that they had where Noel was singing.
Mm.
And it's kind of like... It's like Noel's singing, and so his brother has literally nothing to do. So in the track list, he's listed as playing tambourine on this song. Because it's like he has nothing to do anymore. He's not the writer. Now he's not the singer.
Yeah.
He doesn't play any instruments.
Oh, no.
So it's like Liam Gallagher, tambourine. Yeah.
This is like me at a jam session with a bunch of jazz musicians.
On the tambourine.
Yeah, that's what I do. If I'm not singing, I'm just playing the tambourine.
Look, tambourine is an excellent instrument, I've got
to
say.
That
is some rhythm. That is some feel. But it was definitely
like... No, I feel like... I always feel like a fraud at a jazz gig. They're like, Josh, get up and sing. And I'll be like... Skibby dibby doo wah wah.
Oh,
my name is Angela.
Yes.
And then I riff, and they're like, don't riff. That's not right. It's not the right chromatics.
You did not scat correctly.
Sorry, back to your list. Chris.
Back to my list.
Yes.
Jesus. This is voted number one, number two on this list that I just. Talked about.
I'm going to send
a
message.
I have to go through my notes to figure out what I was going to say. Yeah. I wrote here, written by main songwriter and notorious grumpy pants, Noel Gallagher.
No.
it was the first Oasis single away song. Oh, I'm all out of sorts here. The jazz making fun of has thrown me, guys.
Sorry.
No,
plagiarism. That's what I was on.
Plagiarism. Okay. Yes.
Okay, so the beginning of this song, it starts with this like kind of heavy piano chordal thing, and it's like, it's Imagine. Like, it's straight up Imagine. There's no...
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like... And people are like, dude, that's Imagine. Like, you can't. Like... But and he's like...
Just quiet.
Because I guess he doesn't really care. He was just like, yeah. he just like... There was some quote I read where he's like, yeah, most of the song is like 50% Imagine.
Oh, God.
Like, you know, just no... He's like, I was reading a book by John Lennon at the time. I was really immersed in it. It's just what came out, which is what we were talking about before. Mm. It does just kind of come out if you're influenced heavily by people. But that happened a lot with Oasis in their career, apparently.
They were heavily influenced by
So I now know why Britpop was only 4 years. Because
it was all heavily influenced.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the 60s again.
Yes.
Okay, my third selection. Fourth selection.
Fourth.
Is that The Drugs Don't Work by The Verve.
I don't agree. They do work.
Sometimes.
Oh, they work. this song, I remember hearing this as an exy teenager and being like, oh, my life.
Oh, God.
This is my life. Not that I was so sheltered, I had no connection to drugs at all. Like, it was not at all real.
The caffeine of this Pepsi Max is no longer working.
But I wasn't allowed sugary drinks. Let's not talk about it. I was allowed, like, I would be having soda water and be like, woo, bubbles.
Someone cut her off.
So this song, because this to me, when I started to research Britpop, is really quintessential because it's like weedy white dudes. And it's got these lovely string arrangements, just like the Bittersweet Symphony song by the same band does. But it's really depressing lyrics, simple melodies, really kind of clean but lazy vocals. It's just everything about it. I was like, that just seems like, to me,
Britpop.
What Britpop is
absolutely.
To me. That's what I wrote. Epitomizes Britpop to me. Look at that. Didn't even need my notes for that.
Wow.
This was released the day after Princess Diana died. Wow. So it really captured the like somber feel of the nation. Yes. People were just like, oh.
The world probably.
It was just, well, definitely, but it was, yeah, a really, I'm not sure how strategic that was. Like, who knows exactly when they had planned to release it? I'm not sure. I didn't look into it. Mm. But it debuted at number one. It just went straight to number one. Right. Everyone loved it. Wow, everyone really, it, yeah. And so that was 1997.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 97 from? Grade three.
Yeah. And this, so this is, yeah, really capping off our Britpop era. The last one, same year, is Song 2 by Blur.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And why do they call it Song 2?
Yes, well, explain. They call it Song 2. It's sometimes mistakenly called Woohoo because that's the whole chorus.
Oh, woohoo! I've seen this band in concert.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So, I didn't realize, but now I know.
It's called Song 2 because the band is lazy and it's the second track on the album. And they just as a placeholder, was like, we'll call that Song 2, we'll figure out a name later. And they just never did, and they just left it as Song 2.
So the label even has let them go, yeah, Song 2.
Song 2,
yeah,
that works. Like,
all right. And apparently this song, the lead singer had a kind of acoustic version that he'd just done a rough recording of, much slower, but it had that chorus of just saying woohoo.
Right.
But it was like this kind of stripped back thing. And then the guitarist, who I guess was a bit of an instigator, he was like, let's speed it up and make it really trashy and make the guitar sound really amateur, and we'll like try and sell it to the record company, to those like pompous record company producers. And the producers were like, we love it. What are you doing next? Like, they just ran with it and loved it. And it was incredibly successful. Like, it was internationally successful.
Massive. I didn't even realize.
That's a soundtrack song for sure. It's definitely been heaps of movies.
Yeah. It was really like, yeah, it was punchy and aggressive and emotional. And it really took out of the band's influences, because the band had been going for a while now. Blur was very established by this point. Mm-hmm. And this was off their fifth self-titled album, their fifth studio album. And by this point, they had decided to try and rework their sound. So this was like the real beginning of reworking their sound into more indie pop American bands that normally they would be like American. Before that, they would really be quite cruel to American culture whenever it was brought up. But now they're trying to kind of, I don't know, rebrand and form a new sound, and this was like the beginning of it. So kind of, I guess, the end of Britpop for them.
Yeah, and all of us.
Yeah. and all of us. I have a couple of honorable mentions.
Yes, I'm glad you darling.
Do. I mean, one is Bittersweet Symphony, because I thought that's just such a beautiful song. But I felt I chose the other Verve song, The Drugs Don't Work, just because it's, I don't know, because I figured someone else would say Bittersweet Symphony. Honestly,
that was
going
to be me. Yeah.
Yes.
And the other one is Stop by the Spice Girls.
Love that song.
It's 1997.
So I think that was on our, was that on our girl?
No,
band?
No, it's not. We had Wannabe.
I mean, there's so many Spice Girls songs I could have picked, so I just picked one that Stop I really connected with, because obviously all my friends knew the dance moves and we did it all the time in the schoolyard.
So have we determined why like Spice Girls are a part of this movement?
Well, to me, no, I guess not. To me, I was just like, that's the right era.
Because it definitely came up. No, but I'm only asking because it came up in the research as well.
Yeah.
That the Spice Girls were like the end of the, like they were going to the next era.
Because I think because they were so popular. Right. Like they were just kind of, they eclipsed everyone else.
Yes, they did.
And they were a true Britpop band.
Yeah.
You know, like
and
they wanted
Britpop.
Yeah, proudly Britpop. Like they wanted to bring it back to Britain. Like they were quintessential British. Yeah. Like with their movie.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And everything, they were completely like, yay, Britain. But just everyone around the world loved them for whatever reason more than anyone else.
I think a lot of people revered the Spice Girls in the UK because there were just these five girls that got out. Like they were able to like
Yeah. Like they got out the ghetto.
Yeah, they got out. Yeah. And, you know, and I said this last week in the Girl Bands episode. Like, I remember Victoria saying, like, 3 weeks prior, they were just collecting their doll payments. Mm. And then, like, then 3 weeks later, like, they're the biggest superstars on the earth. It's like, how does that. We don't see a meteoric rise like that much anymore, you know? No, no. Where, you know, you're eating ramen noodles 1 week and then you're eating at the Ivy 6 weeks later. Mm. Like, you're like, where. Sort of like, where does this kind of. How does this happen, sort of thing? So I just wanted to know your opinion on why you think Spice Girls are mentioned in the research of this particular movement.
I gotta say, like, a bunch of lists that I looked at that were like, you know, 50 quintessential albums, the Spice Girls were hardly ever on them. Right. It was always these weedy white dude bands.
Right.
And so, but I feel like the beginning of the work is part of it, and then it's its own personally.
Yes, kind of I feel think about so
it.
Too.
So Stop is like early enough in my mind that it kind of fits.
Well, anything from that Spice album.
Up-tempo Spice song. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to insane. Become one is my...
Yeah.
That's my moment.
Anyway. Well, Gracie, those are some great choices.
Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and then I will tell you what my choices are.
Can't wait to hear them.
Hello, all you beautiful people. I'm Jared, and I'm the host with the most of That Random Podcast. Have you ever wondered what nurses do when they aren't saving lives? Or what DJs do when they aren't spinning decks? Each week, me and a guest, and along with you, the listener, will dissect and look deep into these types of topics. It's heartfelt, funny, and filled with OMG moments. But I won't tell you any. You'll have to come and listen for yourself. Just search That Random Podcast and have fun listening. Bye.
And we're back. Hello. Welcome.
I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness.
That was totally my fault. Cool. No, that's all right.
Well, we just heard from Gracie.
Yes.
And we've heard from myself. Yeah. Oh, I'm so used to going last. That's why I just wasn't ready to talk. I was like, wait, why am I talking? I thought someone else was talking.
No,
our theme this week has been Britpop.
Britpop.
A specific moment in time. A frozen moment in time that informed the next sound. We've heard from my.
Have we?
Yes, we've heard from Gracie, and now we're about to hear from Asabi.
Yes. Hello.
All right.
So this was a struggle because I honestly didn't think I knew anything about Britpop. Well, actually, at first I thought, yes, Britpop, that's fantastic. And some Beatles, we can do some. Whatever.
That's what I thought too.
You know, but when
popular in Britain.
Right, exactly. And then when I saw that it was a specific time frame, I was like, no, I have no idea what was happening.
Yeah, we got the emails. We know how.
We all got the 2 a.m. phone.
Yeah, yeah, right? Like, hey, everybody, quick change. So I have picked some songs from bands that we have already discussed.
Amazing.
That are in that 4 year period. But I've also picked my first band, which is sort of an influencer on Britpop. So it's a band called XTC, which was formed in 1972 by Andy Partridge and Colin Moulding. The name of the song is King for a Day. Now, the reason this song is from 1989, and I chose this song because Andy Partridge is seen as kind of a godfather of the Britpop movement, as you know, he's a heavy influencer on Britpop. And this album, Oranges and Lemons, that this song is from, was an album that was introduced to me by my dad. I have no idea where he got it from. I think he picked it up from like the world music section in a store somewhere. And I just kind of capitalized on it and listened to it every day for like a summer and really loved it. And there's so many great songs on this one. But this song, King for a Day, is one that I remember singing and like having on repeat, as much as you can have on repeat on a CD, and played it over and over, sang it over and over. I will say that the majority of songs on my list have either a 9 or a 10 on the singability scale.
Yes.
Yeah, they are heavy singers, heavy songs that I can really sing to, I can harmonize with, I can do all kinds of stuff with. There's a lot of nostalgia with these songs. Some side notes about this band. So they were formed in the late 70s, godfathers of Britpop. This particular song was 89 on the UK singles chart. It didn't really chart in the US or anywhere else because it was pretty much straight UK sort of fan base. But later on, there have been tribute albums, tribute bands, fan conventions, fan zines across the UK, the US, and Japan specifically to this band. So it's had a little bit of a life outside of the UK, even though the band itself no longer exists.
Right.
So Andy Partridge, who was, you know, pretty big influence, is still making music, but not with this band.
And not with the Partridge family.
No, not with the Partridge family.
Just thought
I'd check. Not at all. But I really love this song. I love this whole album. And it's, you know, it's political. It talks about religion. It talks about, you know, race, which were big influences in the 60s and 70s, you know, when things were a little bit political and a little bit quite
just a
political.
Smidge.
Just a tiny
just
bit.
A smidge
just
politics.
A tiny, tiny, right? So this album to me is kind of, it's one of the albums that sort of kicks off that Britpop moment before it really gets started. But,
right.
You know, they kind of draw from it. So now my next album is from Radiohead, and my next track is from Radiohead. And it's called High and Dry.
Yes,
and
I love this song.
Yes. Now, and this was a song that the band actually didn't think was very good. So it was a number 17 on the UK singles and then 78 on the Billboard Hot 100. So it didn't really chart very high. But this is one of my favorite Radiohead songs. I love singing it. I love to harmonize to the lead melody of it. And it's just, it's really beautiful. Like, it's a really just kind of a light sort of airy tune, and you've got like the lead guitar sort of playing the chorus over the verse, you know, once you get into it. It's just a really beautiful song, a beautiful chord progression, and it captures your attention right from the beginning because it has that cymbal crash and then it's just a drum beat, and it's like a kind of like a almost kind of like a driving funky drum beat before the guitar comes in. And I love that. There's something about a syncopated rhythm that I really love, and that's why I really love this song.
Have you heard the Mikalimka?
I haven't.
That was the first time I heard that song live. But yeah, and it's very different, but still has the same like.
Yeah, and it is a very simple, beautiful, just lovely song. I love it. My next song is from Oasis.
Is it?
And of course, we all know that, you know, Oasis was just like a power Britpop group. Champagne Supernova.
Oh, Santana.
Yes. And I like, it's kind of funny because I don't think of Oasis as like a driving rock band. I don't think of any of these bands as like really driving rock. But you know, I like, there's just something about them that makes you feel nostalgic, even though they weren't around to create that real nostalgia when they first came out, you know.
Absolutely.
So like I was at uni, so this song came out in 96, so I was at uni, I think I was a sophomore, so it was my second year. And I just remember feeling so nostalgic. And I'm like, but for what? Because this is a new song. Why do I have this feeling? So there's something in their music that just really, it makes you feel like you're remembering something from a time gone by.
Well, I think the movement sound was influenced by times gone by too. So that could contribute to how you're feeling.
Exactly.
I think also a song like this, like I think it's probably a melody that we've heard before, and reminds of us of another moment. Like that's because I have a similar feeling to what you get when I hear it as well. Mm. Now, it definitely has nostalgia now because we're like 20 years ahead
of
what was happening.
Yeah.
But I think in that, like I remember when I first heard it when I was in grade, I think I'd heard it when I was in grade 7 or something like that.
Sure.
And I remember going like, oh, like, and I remember like thinking like I was in a movie.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, like that's the whole feeling that it evokes.
Like you have like that kind of slow walk down a hallway montage sort of
with my books in my
feeling.
Hand.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And like even just kind of thinking of the song, that's the imagery that I have in my head. It's, you know, it feels very psychedelic in a way, that very 60s sort of feel. And it's just, you know, the opening moments are quite somber, and then it goes into this guitar riff right in the middle, you know, so it kind of gets really heavy with guitar and it brings it right back down. So I love it. I love everything about this song. It reminds me of the summer thunderstorms when my brother and I would, you know, like we'd put it on the stereo and we'd just lay on the floor and it's dark and you can hear the rain and the thunder and the lightning and you just have this playing and it's just, it's peaceful. It's very peaceful.
Well, I know what I'm doing next time it storms.
If only we had those type of storms.
That's
here.
True. That's true.
It's a little bit different. So now my next tune is a Spice Girls tune.
Yeah, audience going to cheer for that one.
Right. I honestly don't think you can talk about this era without talking about the Spice Girls, as now, we have been chatting.
Now I wish I had mentioned a Spice Girls song in my playlist.
And because we just had, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had our girl band,
yes,
you know, and we talked about the Spice Girls. And I feel like we're always talking about the Spice Girls.
They're important.
Yeah, right. And we've talked about them today already. And so I was trying to think of a good song that I really loved from the Spice Girls. And I actually have that album Spice because yes, I loved it so much. And the song that I've chosen is Who Do You Think You Are?
Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are?
Exactly.
I was going to the harmony, sorry.
Oh, we're not so girl. Okay, that's fine.
Are we going to do the whole song? Yeah, let's do the whole
five,
song.
Five, six, yeah. Seven, eight.
Yeah, yeah.
Who do you think you are? Trust yes, to make the move.
Yeah, we're just going to remember the
yeah,
lyrics.
I have no yes, idea.
Powder
no
songs
idea,
and I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
You know.
1997, right, Spice Girls. And they had basically just come out around this time.
Yes.
And that was the year that they first performed in the US. Because
right,
I think
okay,
in our previous episodes, I was talking about, you know, being in Kim Lab and my mate going, oh, I'm going to go see this group called the Spice Girls
that's
tonight. And
right,
we're like, who? And we're like, who the hell is that? We don't know who they are. But I love like the bridge leading up to the chorus.
Yep.
The who do you think you are? You know, that's just, it's amazing. It's funky. The bass line, I swear to God, the bass line in the song, there's parts of it that sounds like the bass line from Vogue.
Right.
You know, Madonna's Vogue.
It has a very nod to disco. In,
yes.
Like in its instrumentation,
definitely,
for
yes,
sure.
Which, very
I, which
much
is
so,
why I think it contributes to its like timelessness.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. And now this was the song that they sang to open the 1997 Brit Awards. And this is when Jerry wore the Union Jack dress.
Yes. Which was a tea towel.
It was a
I'd just
tea
like
towel,
to say.
People.
I yep, cannot believe. I cannot
believe.
Can you believe?
I cannot
believe that it was a tea towel.
It was just sewn to the top of her dress.
Yes,
it
literally.
Because like
it was just gonna—it was just gonna be a normal like white dress. I think she was.
She's
just
gonna wear
yeah,
that. That's just not iconic
it's
at
not
all.
Not spice.
Not at all. No, not spicy.
Because she was like constantly doing things to try and like
she
push
was,
the edge.
Yeah.
And
well,
make it.
she was so much older.
She was a little bit older than the other
yeah,
girls too.
And
I felt like this was her last.
Like she was really like British pride. Yeah, UK pride. That's kind
of. Oh, out of everyone, she's the most patriotic.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Patriotic. Very much. And I kind of feel like the Spice Girls, like they were kind of the mic drop of the era,
yes,
right? Like they just kind of went, we're here. This is it, bitches. Boom.
Man, I had Spice Girls pencil case. I had Spice Girls rubbers, shoes. Like
wow.
Did you watch Spice World?
Of course I watched
Spice
World.
I watched Spice World.
I had that on VHS and I remember living at a boy's house and I was so frustrated because I could never go back because it's too uncomfortable to like talk to the boy again.
Oh,
so annoying.
Yeah, because you made him watch Spice World. That's
you know what? We should find you a copy. I should buy. That's what I should get you
good,
for your birthday.
Oh, that's cute. Well, I get like, talking about the Spice Girls, I get like quite emotional talking about it because
really?
Like I do because like I've revered the impact that's and the influence like that's like because when I think back to when I go there was like you were the biggest superstars on the planet at that point like
yeah
you know it was like because a lot of like, there's always this thing about like the UK versus the States in regards to like music industry
yeah,
stuff as well and at that like in that little like as again like their little moment of time that they had for
they
like 3 or 4
so
years
huge,
there was no other bigger band on the planet like
yep,
really yeah, really massive, wasn't
everybody loved them and you know they were going to do a reunion show was it in
2007.
No, I think it was 2009 because I was already here.
I think it was, can I tell you why I think it was 07?
Yes.
Because I already booked the tickets for it.
Oh, well, I had been given free tickets.
Did you?
Yes.
Of course Asabi got, like, because it's Asabi.
And I'm pretty sure it was 2009. They were going to be in LA.
Oh, LA. So I was talking about when they were going to come to Australia.
Oh, yeah. No. This was an LA one. And I had received free tickets. All I had to do was go. And I, for whatever reason, I was like.
They had a Vegas residency for a hot minute as well.
Yeah. But it was a lottery thing that they did. Yeah. Nice. And so I'd gotten some tickets. Yeah. And I was kind of gutted because I was like, I should go. And I was like, I could go. And I didn't. And I would have loved to because, you know, I didn't go in 97 when it would have been super cheap probably to see them.
Yeah.
And here I was 2000. But yeah, I love that song. I love a lot of the Spice Girls stuff. And I didn't, I never thought I would. And for whatever reason, I really do. Yeah. I really love them so much.
No, there is some solid musicianship in some of their songs too. Where you just go,
well, just some really good songs like what is it, Mama? Or you know,
I was going to get me going.
Exactly,
right? Did they have much hand in writing many of their songs?
Jerry was the main contributor.
They wrote in a group, didn't they? They wrote as a group.
They did write as a group. Yeah. So all the stuff from Spice.
What a shit show. I can't imagine writing as a group. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine, but I can imagine
it's hard. Yeah.
Well, the first album, they definitely collaborated a lot because they had those two main producers that were
The Absolute or whatever they were called. Yeah.
That they were working with, but Jerry definitely contributed the most in regards to, like, especially lyrically.
Yes.
Apparently, she was the one that came up with Zigga Zigga.
Oh, was she? Yeah. Zigga Zigga.
What a style queen.
When you ask them,
is.
What does that mean? They're like, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Well, the Spice Girls, we don't have to say anything that we. It's our song. Just listen to it.
That makes me think of, I think there was, maybe it was Don't Look Back in Anger. Yeah, it was the Oasis song. Noel Gallagher was quoted as being like, "Yeah, I was so high at the time when I wrote it. I still don't know what it was about."
Yeah,
so many of these bands were just so cooked out of their minds.
Oh yeah,
Nirvana.
Nirvana. Please.
They were never. They actually struggled to emulate their own music a lot of the time. They'd be like, "What do we do?
Yeah,
what does this mean?
Can you play back that recording again?
What was I thinking? Yeah. All right, so now my last song on my list is Clocks by Coldplay.
If you're a piano player, you definitely learn to play that song.
Right?
You have to know how to play Clocks, Evanescence, Bring Me to Life.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
And A Thousand Miles by Vanessa Carlton. They're the three main songs.
So, yeah. Clocks, yes. The other two, no. So this was the song that I heard when I, like, stopped my car, pulled over, and I was like, what the hell is this song? What am I listening to? What is this? Who is this? And I had to find out right away. I then researched them to find out when they were touring. I bought tickets. I drove all the way up to Northern California. So I was living in San Joaquin Valley, Bakersfield, California, and it was a four-hour drive to get all the way up towards wherever I was, San Francisco, outside of San Francisco, went by myself and watched them in concert. I loved it so much. That was like,
I must have been too young to get it.
Maybe.
That has to be it.
Maybe. Were you driving?
Well, I was in grade 9 when this album came out.
Okay, so no. I was an
adult. So I definitely had like 1-2 Step by Ciara playing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
In my Discman.
God. That definitely was not on my radar. Which is amazing because 1-2 Step is pretty adult.
Yeah, yes.
But I loved that open. Like, the song is built around the entire opening piano riff. That
in the key of E flat. Everyone was that to say, the key of E flat.
And that chord progression that goes through, and then the way you can just like easily harmonize with
it is easy to harmonize
everything in that song. So this is one of my tens on the scale of singability. Yep. It's a 10, like, and everything I love it, the bass line, the bass melody. Like, I have no idea what the lyrics mean, but neither did they. So, you know, totally fine.
It's about time.
Well, they just kind of said, a little bit, but they were just kind of like.
You know why I've realized, like, okay, this song that was on a rugby ad. Like it was
right.
Like in, here in Australia, it was like promoting like books and tickets to the rugby.
And I'm like, I can't connect.
Yeah, I can't. Like, I think this.
It makes
I'm
no
having
sense.
Negative experience of the Coldplay.
Oh my God. So it received a Grammy for Record of the Year. Like, oh, wow. Yeah, it was pretty big. It was number 29 on the Billboard Hot 100, number 9 on the it was another Billboard track. I wrote a
like
note.
Adult
that I can't,
contemporary, or
yeah,
something
like yeah. that. Number 9 on the UK singles. This one was really funny. The greatest songs of all time. It was 490 out of 500. So not
that's
really
saying
ranked.
Something,
so,
isn't it?
Hi, yes. And then
my instincts are correct.
I am the voice of the people.
That's yeah. right. And then as you do, you know, when you're like listening to the video on YouTube and then the next video comes up. So the next song that came up used the exact same chord progression. And I was like, well, what is this?
What song was it?
Well, initially I thought it was like a remixed version of Clocks, but it was Speed of Sound that's on the XY album. And oh I was God. Like, oh, this is probably why I didn't like this album.
They plagiarized themselves.
Pretty much.
Or they didn't want to get the sophomore slumps. They just were like, let's not break the formula.
Yeah.
It totally worked.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was something about the X and Y album that just did not have the same pizzazz for me as A Rush of Blood to the Head. And yeah. I like, technically Coldplay was kind of cancelled in my book after that, and I'd never
Coldplay's
well
canceled.
I think
yeah.
no,
I never
I think,
went back.
I think they redeemed them if it I guess I think they redeemed themselves a little bit with Viva La Vida
maybe but it was so like X and Y was such a turn off for me that I right. just never you know like there's always that one album that a band will put out and it's just iconic for them. It
and you
is
think it's
huge
A Rush of Blood,
for
right?
them. For me, yeah. For me and Coldplay, it was A Rush of Blood
I
to the
think,
head.
I think, this is really controversial to say, mm-hmm. but I think XY loved itself too much.
Possibly.
That's my opinion.
I
don't
know. So successful.
Yeah, only, exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know how sometimes you like watch or listen or see a piece of work and go, this loves itself a little
yes.
bit. Like it's loving to
like
be
like they're
on.
Trying yeah. a little too hard.
Yeah, so
after,
that's a yeah. very controversial
their heads
thing.
Are too big.
I mean, White Australia would probably shoot me for that, but
but they'll yeah, have but, to come through
but,
me first.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that was always my impression.
Yeah,
of that
I can,
album.
I can like, see oh, that.
Really
I mean, it's
itself.
The same with like I'm a huge Chili Peppers fan, and I God really damn. Loved Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
Oh, that's a great mm. song.
Well, it's a great album.
Yeah, great
the
album.
Whole
sorry, great
album.
Sorry,
is amazing.
Yeah.
But after that, I wasn't. It nothing
I feel the same
that they did. Actually. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
nothing after that. Yeah. But that was, I think, like they were big before that album.
Yes,
but I
huge.
Think that album, like, it brought together all areas of their audience. Like,
right.
everybody loved that album, and I want to say that was probably one of their biggest, most successful albums. And then everything, like, there were things that they did after that were good. But nothing compared to that.
Yeah, and
album.
And post that album, they definitely had like pockets of awesomeness.
Yeah,
but it wasn't like that consistent thing.
Exactly.
Like predecessing from that album, sort of thing. So
yeah
I totally understand what you're saying yeah. in that. You know.
So for me, A Rush of Blood to the Head, I could listen to every single song in that album all day long, over and over and over. And there's like. The album before that, Parachutes, no, didn't feel the same way.
Yeah.
X and Y didn't feel the same. I didn't even touch anything beyond that. So
yeah, with like Viva La Vida. Oh, yeah. And they had other stuff like and then they started collaborating with Beyonce for a little bit as well.
Oh yeah, I saw them at the Super Bowl performance.
Yeah. Well, it was so funny because like
it felt so out of place.
It felt so out of place until. But the best part for me was the Beyonce Bruno Mars part.
Yeah.
And then it was really funny because an article came out like hours later going because Chris Martin came into and. Uptown
he came
Funk
in the
with
middle,
them in the
yeah,
middle,
yeah.
And the article goes, "No one wants to see Grandpa dancing with the kids."
So true. He was like their nerdy white friend that could
yeah,
sing
exactly.
that too.
Yeah,
yeah,
they're like,
exactly.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, okay,
especially because like
you can do this
come
one.
On.
Thing.
Especially because Beyonce is such a star. Like,
oh, I know.
You know. Like she sucks up the space. And
Bruno
just,
Mars
yeah.
is such a performer.
Oh,
oh
he
my
can
God.
Dance.
Both
man.
Of them are like. Excellent dancers,
yes.
excellent performance.
Yeah.
And there's Grandpa Chris.
Yes. he just sidles up into the middle, like in his tight jeans.
Uptown,
like,
funk you
oh
up.
God.
Uptown, funk you up. Say what?
I felt awkward for him.
Yes.
But good on
him. And also,
him.
He tried to do this mashup of like all the Super Bowl performances in one song, and it wasn't working. It was just like, again, this loves itself too much.
He was trying to play in the big leagues.
Exactly. All right, Chris. All right. Well, you know what? That was a great playlist.
Thank you.
All the choices, right? I'm not like stepping in.
No, we're done.
All right.
We're done.
Yeah. You would think with all my great energy that I've had in this podcast that we've done It's a Flop for the past 45 minutes, but but guess what? We're coming to that segment in just a moment. Stay tuned. And we're back. So if you've been living under a rock for the past 45 minutes, we've been talking about Britpop.
Britpop.
Britpop, which is one word. Yes. A frozen moment in time from 1993 to 1997.
4 years of joy.
Yes, 4 years of joy that informed the next sound. I think that's. I should be a college lecturer about Britpop.
You should.
That's, just to sum up, though, like, just come in for the summer.
Don't get me to talk about the songs because it'll be a very negative experience.
Go, yeah, I wasn't in this, but anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I'll talk about the Spice Girls for 45 minutes.
There we
absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely. Well, I've had such a good time listening to Gracie, listening to Asabi, not listening to myself.
We've enjoyed listening to you.
And talking about Britpop and the influence that it had in such a short amount of time. And you know, with all our great choices comes our not good choices.
Yeah, well, yes.
And we're up to my favorite segment. It's a flop. So each of us have one song that we just aren't feeling. I have a feeling I have lots of songs that I wasn't feeling in this genre, but we're going to start with the amazing Gracie Mac.
Yay. Okay, well, mine, it's a flop in terms of how it's used today. It's Wonderwall. No shade, Josh.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that I chose it.
Yeah. It's just because it's just like becomes the butt of a joke at every party if there's acoustic guitar, which there always is an acoustic guitar at any party.
Even if it wasn't there to begin with, somehow an acoustic guitar ended up in the room.
That acoustic guitar is coming out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And if it's a white boy, I'm sorry, he's going to play
And they won't tune the guitar before it starts either.
They won't tune it. That's all. You got to keep it authentic.
I can honestly say that I have been to parties at Gracie Mac's house where there have been many instruments and no one has ever played Wonderwall.
Well, I'm invited to the next one, obviously.
But I think it's because they're all very young.
Well, they're all musicians.
So you're playing like 17-minute jazz pieces with no choruses.
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly what we're doing.
That's my flop.
Everyone's like, is this the hook?
Exactly.
We don't know what's happening.
There was actually this really great moment that happened. It was like a 7 a.m. moment and it was my acoustic guitar, I gotta say. It was like my own guitar. That I was like, everyone's like, let's have a sing along. And everyone's like, yeah, it's Beatles. Like, let's pick something we all want to do.
Lucy in the Sky, and
this guy, this lovely guy who plays guitar really well. And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll
it's
do one.
It's not Fincher, is it?
No.
Okay.
No. And then he just starts playing his own composition. And we all just went, Do you want us to play along? Do you know the song? It was just this, like, it was like a 5-minute, very intense ballad of his own making. And we all just sat there and watched him be like,
Is this cut commentary?
Is that?
So you didn't just jump
that
in.
That was the last attempt at a sing along. It's his own like creation.
Oh my God.
He was into it.
That's like going to a jazz jam and everyone knows what's going on except the singer. And you just go,
This is why. I love that.
But then you get looked at like sing something and you're like, what?
You just make it up.
Because what I do is you know, this is my specialty, is that I'll sing like a pop song over what's going on.
Yeah.
And then get the shade.
That's a good one.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be like some obscure progression going and I'm like, if you want to be with me, baby. Because that's what I specialize in.
So good.
Oh my goodness.
Just make things up. But
yes. That's what, jamming still intimidates me to this day.
Oh, I love it.
Anyway, so that's a great flop.
Wonderful.
I don't take it personally because I forgot what my choices were 4 to 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And we've also got Asabi. What is your flop, girl?
All right, my flop. And again, apologies, Josh, because it's another one that was on your list.
Really?
I didn't know. Girls and Boys by Blur.
Again, I forgot that I even spoke about that.
I feel that it just sounds so annoying. That was like, and the thing is,
it belongs in a gym.
Not even. Song, like, no, it just belongs like Body Attack. Nowhere.
This, like, it belongs nowhere.
Cruel.
You know, I struggled because I was like, I don't know that I know this genre well enough to even pick anything. And then as I was researching, I was like, oh yeah, that song. Oh, that's Blur. I didn't even know who sang the song. And as much as I like song two, because I do, mm-hmm. I love song two. This Woo-hoo! One, exactly. This song, I was just like, ugh, no.
Well, that's Asabi's choice. Thank you. I also have a choice.
What's your choice, Josh?
Now, I've spoken so positively about Coldplay all night, obviously. So it's only fitting that my flop is a Coldplay song. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I've chosen Fix You.
I don't even know that song.
Which is odd because X and Y wasn't your moment. Right, that's right. Okay. Mm. It reminds me of just basic people in my life back in the day
that just bitches not that
loved this song. They're like, oh, we should just have an item at church, all this kind of stuff. And like, I just never ever thought it was not inspiring to me.
Right.
Like at first and try, if you don't succeed, I'm already out. Just like, whatever. Lights will guide me home. No, they won't. My mum will pick me up from school. Thank you very, very much. Oh like, God. It was just like, I
am home before dark.
Yeah, exactly. Now, yeah. I'm not saying, now, I actually enjoyed the Viva La Vida album, but the prior.
Was this from X and Y? Or was this from.
No, X and Y is this song. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So then the album after that was, boom, 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 ba-dum, boom, ba-dum, boom. Yeah, exactly. And the other one, When I Rule the World. Yeah, that one.
That's
and,
that one, yeah.
Then another song, If You Love Me, Don't You Lay It Me. Violet Hill, that was the other song that I liked off that album too. But this song, Fix You, not inspiring.
Not about it.
Give me One Sweet Day, Mariah Carey, Boys Don't. Give me something else. Like,
this
just wasn't it. As I said, I just felt like this album loved itself too much. That's just my opinion.
Show me what you're working with.
Exactly. But that ends another great episode of Shuffology. Now, you can always reach out to us on social media. I'm sure after you hear my beautiful opinions of Coldplay, I'm going to hear from a lot of you about how Coldplay changed the world, etc., etc., etc. I did see them play at Splendor in the Grass back in 2012 or something like that, 2011.
They were still playing in 2012.
Well, they were the headliner for the festival.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because festival culture really started coming back up in 2010 and onwards.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially in Australia. Festival culture is huge in our country.
Yeah,
we have
it's
so
big.
Many, we have
you
so
have
many
so
festivals.
So many festivals.
We have like six mini Coachellas a year. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy.
It's pretty awesome.
So with that, and yeah. Reach out to us. We're Shuffology Podcast on Facebook. We're Shuffology Podcast on Instagram. And you can also email us at shuffologypodcast@gmail.com. My name is Josh DeVenna. Can we please put our hands together for Gracie Mack again? Thank you, audience, for always being on cue. To Asabi Goodman, the effervescence Asabi Goodman.
Thank you.
And we will see you next week for another great episode of Shuffology. Bye.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.